Welcome back here on Can't Wait, and 2015 has been a year of music. We don't know if it's been good music, bad music, huge music. I mean, the music industry is in a weird spot. Nobody buys it anymore, so you just kind of like what you like. Yeah. But then the fall, we were just talking about before we kicked the mics on again, the fall's got monster releases. Adele's going to have a new record that saves the music industry for the next 18 months. Mm-hmm. Rihanna's supposed to have a new record. Kanye might finally put Swish out, or if he doesn't, that might go the way of Compton, you know, or Detox, and then he puts out a Compton.
Yeah.
Frank Ocean, Radiohead, you know, there's big things happening in the fall and winter. But what we thought we would do is talk about what's happened so far in 2015, what's caught our ear, and I would say my favorite record thus far has been Michael Cronin's MC3. I think that of these guys that do this garage rock thing, a genre I'm already pre-wired to like, he's the best songwriter. He's the best musician. He writes the best pop hooks. And he makes the most interesting production choices. Mm-hmm. I think that record front to back is everything I've been waiting for him to put out. I don't know if MC4 could possibly be a step up just because I think this thing is so polished, but not over-polished. Mm-hmm. And I just love it. And it also came out during the time when Kelly and I took that big road trip. Mm-hmm. So it was like we got to have it in the car. I bought it at Goner Records, like the actual physical Goner building.
Cool.
And so it was just the stars lined up for this record to be my favorite record so far. But I've got other records I like just as much. So that's going to be my record of 2015 thus far. Matt Milner, what do you think?
Yeah, I like that album. I don't think I like it as much as his last record. But part of that is that, again, maybe these things are all kind of context dependent, that I feel like that last record kind of came into my listening life at a really good time when I was looking for something like that. So yeah. I played it again and again and again and again.
And I would say that the leap from the first to the second record was bigger than the second to third.
Yeah, and that's probably another part of what has sort of set maybe just the perspective that I've viewed this album through, is that I agree that that leap up sonically from the first to the second, there were whole new worlds that were opened in that second album in terms of doing things that you would not expect to find on a garage rock record. Because even though he's identified as being part of that genre,
of that world, yeah,
aesthetically, it has almost nothing in common with any other contemporary that, you know, the guys that he's collaborating with.
Yeah, nobody kind of goes for that same level of orchestration.
Right.
You know, he's on another level. He's writing different kinds of songs.
And part of it is that he's actually a trained musician.
Yes.
You know, he has like a conservatory background. He played saxophone for a long time. He has both a jazz background, a composition background, a theory background. I mean, he is a real live musician.
Yeah.
So it's cool that he has found a way to be able to still very much be a part of that really thriving garage revival that's going on right now, but bringing in that level of polish and
but not production. Snobby and pretentious about
it. No, not at all. Yeah. So yeah, that's a good pick. My next one actually probably in some ways is a similar fit to that, or at least the appeal for me has some of the same qualities, which is the new Titus Andronicus album.
That's a lot of record.
It's a lot of record.
That's so much album.
And so I've been a really, really big fan of theirs since their first album came out. They speak to sort of my own palette of influences really well in terms of, you know, music that has resonated for me growing up, music that I listen to now. So they hit kind of right that sweet spot between like the nostalgia core, but then also, you know, what I'm still interested in today. And they've always been a band that is really unlike any other in terms of their level of self-referential mythology, the truly epic approach that they take to crafting albums. And this is overstuffed and ambitious in the best possible way. I mean, it's a 96-minute album.
That sounds about right.
Triple album, 30-plus songs. There's really no one else that could make this album or would even bother to try. And, you know, there aren't many punk bands that make 90-minute long albums that include multiple sort of traditional, very earnest choral arrangements in them of like traditional choral songs, multiple 10-minute long big epic rockers, and then a bunch of like great perfect 3-minute rock songs as well. So it's not their best album. I think The Monitor is still a better album, but and it's not my favorite of their albums either, but it's the most kind of platonically ideal version of what Titus Andronicus is and what their aesthetic is. I think that the kind of key track on that that embodies it for me is comes sort of right in the middle of the record, and it's More Perfect Union, which mm-hmm. is one of the two like 10-minute long songs. And this is a song that starts off for the first like 2 minutes. It's like a slow, sort of vaguely Irish dirge. And then it goes into this sort of extended instrumental section that's still like sort of vaguely Irish. Then it just turns into like a proggy instrumental jam. Then it turns into like a Thin Lizzy song for a while. And then it comes back to being like vaguely Irish at the end. But it all, it's just crazy. And it's overstuffed, and it's great and really fun. So not an album that you can just like pop on and breeze through in 40 minutes or whatever. It's a bit of an undertaking. It's a lot to chew on, but I've really enjoyed it. Not surprised that I did, but I thought it was a great return to form for them.
I don't think I've listened to the whole thing start to finish. I think I've heard the whole record, mm-hmm. but I don't think I haven't done it consecutively.
Yeah,
I think I have to take it in chunks.
Yeah,
because the last record that was that dense and that unfiltered, I guess, with ideas, David Comes to Life.
I was going to say, that's the closest comparison, probably.
By a band we can't say on KXEI.
I think we can. I mean, we're not on the air. We won't. We might have, you know.
Flubbed up. Yeah. Is kind of a parallel in terms of the inter-band tension creating some of what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Patrick Stickles is not an easy guy to probably talk to or have a friendship with or have a relationship with.
Yeah.
But it kind of is why his records are as compelling as they are.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. And he's also he's a great example of, you know, that sweet spot that exists for an artist between like insecurity and, you know, self-confidence, that he's able to tackle these incredibly ambitious projects that you have to be, you know, just insanely ambitious to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it has like the sort of, it's paired with the crippling insecurity that allows him to be a perfectionist and, you know, take time and care to do these things the right way. So
yeah, the stuff he's singing about has not kept him from making it.
Right. That's a very good way of putting it.
They're a cool band. You know, there's really not a lot like it out there anymore, mm-hmm. especially on that scale that played with many people. I mean, I think the last time that kind of band had this kind of devotion was the Hold Steady.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that same kind of... those bands that do the Springsteen thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, the blue collar thing.
Yeah.
I think they're probably, they're the best at it right now.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
No, I definitely think they are, especially because they're very earnest about drawing on that tradition, but not in a way where they're just trying to ape it.
Yeah. You know? His own guy.
Yeah.
There's no one like him.
Yeah, his own guy. And they're also, you know, unabashedly a punk band mm-hmm. as well. So I think that more so than other bands that have tried to kind of thread that needle, they do a nice job of marrying, you know, the punk aesthetic to the big E Street Band type sound.
If you want to keep liking Titus Andronicus, don't follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. There are some people it's best to know less, and it's best to just absorb the work. You know, that's not a fun Twitter follow.
Yeah.
And now we've been talking a lot about rock music, but there's rock music continues to push toward the margins mm-hmm. when it comes to even with these lists, you know, like when you read the Stereo Gum Pitchfork kind of year-end lists, they used to just be dominated by indie rock.
You'd be lucky to find one in the top 10 in a given
year.
Yeah,
I mean, you'll see like The War on Drugs
right.
won't be very, or like, you know, this upcoming Kurt Vile record.
Yeah, that'll be in there. Yeah.
But I think the most interesting record I've heard this year is a mainstream R&B record called Wild Heart by Miguel. I think that record is awesome, and that's not a genre I typically go in for.
Yeah,
I think so much of it is derivative, and you know, the handful of people that try to do something interesting.
Yeah.
Oh goodness, did we just get kicked offline? What just happened?
Are we still recording? It looks like we're still recording.
Cool. We're going to leave all that.
Yeah. You know what? So for some context for our non-viewing audience at home, the lights just went out. The computer screen shut off.
It seemed like a huge power surge.
It seemed like a power surge, and we thought we had lost our show, but it looks like it's still rolling, yeah. So we're just going to keep on going.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. So, this Miguel record.
Mm-hmm.
it's the best Prince imitation that anybody's capable. I think that dude's a major talent. Like, that guy's a real songwriter. He's got style. He's really clever. He's a great singer. He makes interesting production choices.
Mm-hmm.
He got into kind of a public thing with Frank Ocean, you know, saying I make better records. He does. He makes better records than Frank Ocean.
Yeah.
You know, for all the hype that Frank Ocean got for Channel Orange, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of it deserved because I think that's a pretty good record.
Mm-hmm.
I think Miguel's Wild Heart is way better. It's way better. It's another one of those overstuffed. It's a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
It's conflicted about what it's singing about. He doesn't know if he wants to do this Lothario thing. He mm-hmm. doesn't know if he's comfortable with that. But there are these moments of real inspiration in that thing. And I would say that's probably the most ambitious artistic undertaking, especially on a pop scale.
Yeah.
And I love it. I think, and that's not a record that gets a lot of play at KXCI.
Yeah.
Not just genre-wise, but content-wise. I don't think a lot of it could get to the airwaves.
Right.
I would recommend to anybody that wouldn't originally give Miguel a shot, man, that's a record. That's a real, that's an album that, like, the sequencing, like, they put thought into the way the tracks were sequenced.
Yeah.
It's really good. That's my most played Spotify record this year.
Wow. Well, you know, and I want to actually touch on that very quickly before we keep going through, is that this is probably the first year for me where the majority of new music that I've consumed has just been through Spotify.
Yeah.
And I don't feel great about that. I still buy physical music, but the reality is that even when I'm buying things on record, I don't really listen to them on record all that often because I listen to records in a different context mm-hmm. than when I listen to CDs, MP3s, whatever.
It's just convenient.
Once
you get into it, it's hard to go back.
Yeah, it is. And again, a lot of the stuff I listen, like that Titus Andronicus album, I have the beautiful triple LP. The majority of the times I've listened to it, it's been through Spotify just because that's in my pocket
there.
And it's there, whatever. But I do think that it's changed the way that I listen to new music pretty dramatically because in the past, when I was going out each Tuesday and picking up a couple of new records that looked interesting to me,
mm-hmm.
You know, those CDs would then be in my car for the next month. And whether I liked the record or not at first, I would just kind of keep listening to it. It would just kind of keep cycling through. And almost anything I bought, I'd listen to at least 10 times through and then could kind of decide whether that was going to be the end of listening to that album or whether it was going to enter the Hall of Fame of records that I return to again and again. I don't do that anymore. And I don't, you know, if I listen to an album once and it doesn't click, it's like, okay, well, what's next on Spotify?
Right.
And that bums me out.
I have infinity choices.
Yeah, that bums me out.
Yep. The overwhelming number of choices mm-hmm. that we're presented with has made it almost impossible to go deep on something where you're going to go deep on the things you love.
Sure, yeah.
But you won't give the things that maybe take a minute
mm-hmm.
that fair shake. And that's something that drives me crazy about music criticism right now is that somebody is going to tell me they have an opinion on that Destroyer record, you know, after what, two listens?
Right.
They're
right.
going to listen to Dan Behar and they're going to be able to come up with something to say about that record after
right.
a week.
Right.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
That thing, I don't know how I feel about it yet,
yeah.
and I won't know how I feel about it probably until next July.
Right.
Only recently did I start kind of getting kaput.
Right.
You know,
right.
Only recently did that one start to
right.
make sense to me.
Right.
The biggest record of the year that I think has driven me the craziest is that Kendrick Lamar album.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that anybody thinks that they can have an opinion on To Pimp a Butterfly after a couple streams
right.
or a couple, you know, like you hear that
while they're doing the dishes or like walking the dog or whatever, you know.
That's nonsense.
Yeah.
That record is way too big.
Yeah.
Way too sprawling.
Mm-hmm.
Way too confusing. Even, I mean, you know, I think Kendrick would be the first to tell you that. That's not, there's not like singles on that thing.
Right.
That's a concept record. That's mm-hmm. like the, he was trying to make like a Gil Scott Heron kind of a thing. There's like jazz flowing through it. There's, you know, old like 92 era G-funk mm-hmm. on it. You know, it's a weird strange, sprawling record from a guy who's ostensibly the best MC right now. Mm-hmm. And the fact that anybody's like, oh, yeah, it's not that great, or, oh, it's the best thing I've ever... No, you're all lying.
Yeah.
None of you have an opinion on it yet. I'm sorry, you don't.
Yeah.
You have to give that thing time.
Yeah.
And I commend him for making a record like that now.
Yeah.
Especially at his... He could have just put out 10 perfect singles by being the best rapper right now,
mm-hmm,
and dominated the whole summer.
Yeah.
Instead, he chose to make a deeply personal, weird, conflicted record about police brutality and, mm-hmm, just all the stuff that's going on with him right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that music criticism is just, it's as bad as it's ever been. And I hate to be that critical, but I just feel like the way that it's been, the way that people consume music now has almost obliterated the way people write about music, at least on a popular scale.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that the challenge that that music critics face now, it's twofold. One is that the music critic serves a different role,
yes,
now. Because in a world of Spotify and Apple Music and albums being up on YouTube and all of that, you don't need the critic to tell you whether to buy an album or,
right,
not, or, you know, to help gauge, you know, what is going to be the type of music that you want to seek out. Because you can just click on it. You see a headline, you see, you know, the number on a review, you think, oh, well, let's give that a shot. You listen to two songs and you've made up your mind one,
yeah,
way or the
good
other.
I'm good here.
Yeah. So, you know, but not that long ago, at a time when people were still consuming music primarily through purchasing it, or even, you know what, even when people were pirating music, they still had to seek it out.
Yep.
There's still, it's an active enterprise of deciding, I want this record, I'm going to find it, I'm going to download it, and then I'm going to consume it. It's different. The way, I think that it's no longer geared towards being able to serve as an introduction. But I find that in some ways it's less useful,
yep,
because of that, or it maybe it just fills a different need, and I guess maybe it's not better or worse, but it's just it's a different medium now in most cases.
Yeah, that knee jerk trying to get out a review as people still care about the record,
right,
is impossible.
Yeah,
but to try to write with any kind of authority about something like that that needs a little time to sit there. You're fighting a failing battle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the smarter music writers see that and then write about things differently. They don't just, a traditional album review does not, just doesn't work now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to almost write bigger trend pieces, or,
yeah,
like when Steve Hyden writes something for Grantland, he writes, mm-hmm, a bigger picture thing,
right,
and then you can kind of put things into context, and he's at least given these records a few spins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't, you know, even sending out that the records in advance, that doesn't work anymore, because now you're going to get leaked and,
sure,
you're going to obliterate your first week sales, which are nothing anymore because, right, no one buys anything.
Yeah.
So I just think we're in a spot now where these people are trying to put out challenging music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the impulse to create music hasn't changed.
Sure.
But the fact that people think that they can have this immediate opinion on something that clearly requires time to sit with is not something I see getting better. And I hope that doesn't dissuade artists from putting out challenging things.
Well, it's one of the reasons, though, why I generally pay a lot more attention to year-end lists,
yeah,
than contemporary reviews, because more often than not, by the end of the year, especially if an album came out sometime in the first half of the year, there's been enough time to sit with that record that whoever is coming up with their list has gone through different phases of listening with it.
Sure.
They're out of the honeymoon phase.
Yeah.
They've entered into...
It's not part of the greater conversation.
Right.
You know, now you're just listening to the record.
Exactly. And there are always records, you know, each year that maybe don't click on the first few lessons, and you find yourself for some reason wanting to revisit, you know, down the road.
So, or even conversely, a record that's like hot out the gate that you're done with in 2 months.
Yeah, that's true.
I would have thought that if you asked me what my favorite record of the year was now, you know, best record of 2015, when it came out, was that Slater-Kinney record.
Mm.
I thought that thing was red hot, mm-hmm, and I listened to that thing every day for about a month.
Yeah,
I don't think I've put it on again since.
Yeah.
And it's still good. Slater Kinney's awesome, but that did not make the list that we're going to talk about today.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe to kind of circle back around using that as a segue to another one that's on my list that is an early, relatively early year release, I guess, something that I listened to a ton when it came out, didn't listen to it for a while, and then I've been listening to it again recently because I'm ready to go back to it, is that new Sufjan Stevens album, Carrie and Lowell.
Yeah.
Which, and I'm not a, like, on the all-time Sufjan Stevens fan club list. I've, you know, there are records of his that I really like. There are records of his that I've never even bothered to listen to. I think that this, however, is by far the strongest album that, certainly that I think he's ever put out because of the directness of it. It's
a clarity of purpose.
Clarity of purpose is a great way to describe it. That from the very first lines of the first song, it's clear that this is an album that is meant to guide you along a curated experience of grief and loss and confusion and tackling challenging topics, but doing it in a way that is very, very carefully and thoughtfully laid out and edited so that you're for 35 minutes or whatever walking down this, you know, this journey of grief that Sufjan walked down as well in a way that feels very, very personal, but still universal. And the way the great music manages to bridge that gap between mm-hmm. having, you know, unquestionably having the details that make it about him and this one person, but touching on themes and topics that everybody goes through, deals with, grapples with. But even putting aside all that, I just think it's a really beautiful album. The arrangements are gorgeous. They're really spare. Sometimes it's just, you know, a guitar and a ukulele or a guitar, a little piano comes in.
Yeah, the Wurlitzer
come in. Yeah, something like that. And given that what he was probably most famous for before were these huge, you know, orchestral, you know, the Illinois, the Michigan album, you know, these sweeping things that'll have 18 or 19 different instruments on them and, you know, big complicated 20 song albums, to just do something that's this quiet and direct, I found that it really resonated with me, and it's something that I find myself coming back to now, and that these songs all, despite their simplicity, have really kind of sunk their claws in on some level.
That was a record I was rooting against. Like, that guy drives me crazy.
Uh-huh.
But then it was undeniably good.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that used to drive me crazy about him is gone from that record.
Yeah.
Like, when what we call sweeping orchestral arrangements in Illinois, I call school play.
Yeah.
I felt like there was always this, like, that mid-2000s, end of blog rock.
Yeah.
Super pretentious time.
Uh-huh.
Where, you know, the Decemberists fell into that trap a little bit too every once in a while. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, these people that have songwriting ability and talent and just got kind of, they fell in with the wrong crowd. You know, it was so cutesy and so precious.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a concept record about Illinois. Give me a break.
Right.
You know, even though there were really good songs on it,
sure.
You know, good moments.
Yeah.
And then he just couldn't get out of his own way. He mm-hmm. just like, now we're going to throw on this little flute flourish. And
yeah.
It was just like, get over it. Are you serious with this? And I think a lot of that had to do with me wanting to listen to more rock and stuff at the time.
Yeah.
But I went to see him when he came to town on that record at the Old Plush, now the Flycatcher.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And imagine trying to stuff that whole band onto that stage, all nine of them or whatever, and they're all wearing these angel wings.
Yeah,
and
I remember that tour.
It was, he sings incredibly well,
mm-hmm.
and he does know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And to see him put out a record that's, like, guy grew up, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I always felt like those flourishes and those arrangements were almost like a defense mechanism.
Mm.
Like, I can't quite just go vulnerable on you. I can't just write what I'm thinking about. I got to write about John Wayne Gacy.
Right.
Or, you know, I have to hide it behind some other gimmick.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was you know, the story about him being like this grew up Christian, and, you know, him and the Danielson family kind of parallel to him. These people that were trying to do indie rock and trying to do weird art projects,
mm-hmm.
but not trying to feel ashamed of it.
Yeah.
And it feels like now he's that's almost a Mountain Goats record.
Yeah.
With how direct and cohesive It is.
And certainly a lot of the themes are very Mountain Goats-esque,
yes,
of like going back and grappling with these sort of traumas from childhood that mm-hmm. have been recontextualized by a more recent loss. I mean, that's right in the Mountain Goats wheelhouse.
I remember when the Should've Known Better, you know, mm-hmm. was the lead single from that record. that was his first foot forward. Here's what Carrie and Lowell's going to be.
Right. Yeah.
And I hear it on Sirius XM.
Uh-huh.
I'm driving around and I'm like, this guy?
Yeah.
This guy's got a record? Okay. Right. And so it starts in, you know, this Should've Known Better. Uh-huh. Da, 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 da. I'm like, okay, that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
And then I had gotten to where I needed to go,
mm-hmm.
and the little keyboard part had just started. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I got to finish this.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the saddest thing I ever heard.
Yeah.
God, that record's good. And I didn't want to like it. It's really good.
Yeah, and I can honestly say that I don't think that I had listened to one of his records in the last 6 years. Probably. That's probably a fair statement.
Yeah.
6 years. Hadn't listened to
a single... Because he had the Age of Odds that happened in there.
Never listened to it once.
Yeah.
Just went right past me. I'm sure there's stuff on it that I would have liked, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's not... You know,
it's
not
so much time of the day.
Yeah. And so my point is just that I'm not a Sufjan Stevens homer.
Yeah.
And like you, I wasn't going in expecting, like, I can't wait for this record. I'm going to get floored by it. But it came out. I listened to it. And... It just really blew me away, and I guess that's the flip side of the coin. We've been bashing on the Spotify listening culture, but I wouldn't have bought that record,
right?
You know, because I hadn't.
You needed access.
I needed access. So and that is a record that, you know, now if I'm in a record store and I stumble upon it and they've got it on vinyl, I will buy that record. Yeah, and I will be happy to have it as a record that I return to, you know, years down the line. So there is an upside to it. I mean, I don't like a lot of the ways that it has changed my listening habits, but that is one thing I do like.
You know, if we want to bring in a little bit of what we were talking about before, Sufjan Stevens is a post-hype fantasy sleeper.
Yeah,
he's a.
That's a good point.
I mean, he was huge. Illinois was like top of everyone's list. And
sure.
When he was kind of king of indie rock, I couldn't stand the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's like, he's kind of an old man
mm-hmm.
in terms of what's happening now. He's kind of out of place. And
right.
It's perfect. You know, it's where he should be making the kind of records he's capable of making.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that thing's a stunner.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. That's a good call. I wouldn't even thought to bring that up, but that's a really good record. I would say a record along the same lines, you know, of, you know, what would be, introspection and sadness and loss. This new Carly Rae Jepsen record. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, the new Carly Rae Jepsen record is my favorite record of the year. That record is so fun. Have you listened to Emotion?
No, I haven't. I've heard. I mean, I know people are kind of going crazy about it.
So here's.
I heard about these listening parties.
Oh my god, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's got this. There's an '80s influence to it, but it's not kitsch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they'll be like. Smooth slap bass and you know just, it's totally like a Whitney Houston record from like 88 but you know through this millennial lens
mm-hmm.
and you know she's the best at this mean for the Call Me Maybe wasn't a fluke,
right?
She's the real deal. She's got a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
This new millennium, I think there have been two pop records to me, like fun pop albums that have just or just a cut above
mm-hmm.
That the second Kelly Clarkson record Breakaway I think is perfect.
Yeah,
I think it's
so
perfect.
Good.
Since You've Been Gone is so good that it justifies the entire existence of American Idol.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, for all the trash that show has put out into the world, the fact that Since You've Been Gone exists is fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's we're even.
Yeah.
The other one is Body Talk, Robin.
Mm-hmm.
I think is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I think this record could get there.
Wow.
I think the production on it is perfect. Her voice on it it's a little more mature because, you know, the Call Me Maybe, if it was there was an airiness,
mm-hmm.
you know, almost even though she's older than most pop stars, you know, her voice is young sounding.
Yeah.
And this one she doesn't sound as young.
Mm.
You know, this is a more mature record, but it's still super fun. Oh my god, it's good. Front to back. She said she wrote like 40 or 50 songs for it.
Wow.
And she just killed herself to make sure that the, you know, whatever 13, 14 that made the record were it's like 10 singles. That record is jam after jam, and if If you're too sad after listening to Sufjan Stevens and you need a little dance party pick me up, man, that's the record.
Yeah.
That's everything that you could say about pop music. That anything that you would want from a pop music record,
yeah,
you're going to get from that record.
All right. Well, I've got something to do this afternoon. Then.
You load that up on Spotify, you'll be good to go.
Yeah, I'm driving up to Phoenix this afternoon. I feel like that's
the perfect antidote
for a miserable Phoenix drive.
Yeah, wait till you're about 20 miles out of town. You're in that stretch, which is just garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah,
The whole drive, you mean? Yeah.
Well, once it's just, it's wasteland.
Right.
That wasteland portion, put on Carly Rae Jepsen, you'll feel pretty good.
Yeah, very good.
You got any other records that really tickled you?
Yeah, I'll throw out one more that maybe it's in a similar spirit as that one. And honestly, it might even be the record I've listened to the most times, just in terms of sheer numbers. But the Kacey Musgraves album.
Oh, wow.
Pageant Material.
Okay.
Again, this is not something I would have expected to even listen to once necessarily. But, when it came out, there were, a lot of think pieces about her. Because she's like the country star that it's okay to like for the NPR set. Because, she has these
rootsier.
But also that, her songs touch on progressive themes. Mm-hmm. And, she is unabashed about just smoking pot and hanging out and doing her thing. Bottom line, that's a really, really, really good album. I don't really care about the distinction between country and pop country because I think it's a meaningless distinction.
There's no line there anymore.
Yeah, and there hasn't been for 50 years.
Yeah.
The idea that there's some purity test that you should be judging country music by.
Right. There's Lucinda Williams is the real... come on.
Yeah. That ship sailed literally half a century ago. But it's just an album that's filled with really good songs. They're beautifully arranged. Unabashed... the arrangements are still unabashedly country. We're talking songs that have banjo and pedal steel and but really tastefully done, not in a kitschy way. Some nice little modern flourishes here and there, but mostly just really good songs that are catchy and fun, and they all formulaic, but formulaic in a way that works. She has this way of
formulaic gets a bad rap.
Yeah, right. It does. Formulas work. Most things follow formulas. Her formula is that every song that she writes uses these sort of aphoristic couplets.
Mm.
Every song is just made up of these little couplets that are all these clever little one notch above fortune cookie slogans. But darned if they're not really kind of insidiously catchy and find ways to sort of slip inside you. And it's just a very to me, it's not only a fun record, but it's one that has a clear voice. You really feel you know who she is as a person from it. I've really enjoyed listening to it. I will definitely consider myself a fan of hers going forward, and not something I would have ever thought was going to be on my listening radar this year. But maybe another Spotify success story.
Sure, yeah. I know that and she has no interest in that Taylor Swift crossover.
No, not really. I mean, but she's in many ways still the closest thing. She's the thinking person's Taylor Swift now, I guess, because she's still, she got an 8.0 review on Pitchfork.
Yep.
And you see stories about her in the New York Times and on NPR. And, she's...
People on Twitter shout her out.
Yeah. And so she's got crossover, pop success without necessarily being a, on the front of, tabloids or whatever. But she's really talented. And I really enjoy that record.
And it's... She's playing still in a genre where people buy music.
Yeah, they do. It's true. And she's on the fringe. I mean, she won the Grammy, her last record won the Grammy in 2014, I guess. So it's not like she's some outlaw who's on the fringes of country music or whatever. But she just still doesn't have the type of commercial success that all the bro country guys
have. She's not Blake Shelton.
No. So she's still kind of marginalized within that world, despite still... having a lot of success.
She kind of occupies the pre-George Bush comment Dixie Chicks slot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's a pretty fair comparison in that regard.
So if Kacey Musgraves starts talking trash about Obama or something, she makes some... I guess it would have to go... She'd have to make some sort of comment about Trump.
Yeah, because I think she's pro-Obama.
Yeah, one would have to assume.
Yeah.
So if she comes out and just... blasts Trump.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, is it over?
We'll find out. We'll find out.
You got anything you want a quick shout outs? Anything that maybe doesn't get the longer treatment?
Yeah. One thing is just that I'm sure we'll revisit this at the end of the year once all those big albums have come out. Mm. There's still albums that have come out so far that I haven't had the chance to really dig into yet. Mm-hmm. I haven't really listened to Compton.
It's a lot. It's kind of on that same Kendrick Lamar thing where there's right. just a lot of sounds.
Yeah.
I don't think I like it, but it's still early.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's going to, I might not know for a while. But, and that Destroyer album, I'm with you. Like, I mean, I've listened to it 3 or 4 times. I have no idea how I feel about it. I might love it. I might think it's just fine. I'll have to keep trying. And then a record that came out last week that I'm just digging into is the new Libertines album.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They were one of my favorite bands in high school. I'm really shocked, frankly, that they exist again.
Or that he's still alive.
Yeah. But they fall into the grand tradition of British bands who have like two front men who seemingly hate each other, but bring out the best in each other creatively. Yeah. So the songs that I've heard from it, I really like. And I wouldn't be surprised if a few months from now that ends up being a record that I listen to 15 or 20 times.
I really like the new Beach House record. Mm. That was a band that always kind of, okay, I got 20 minutes, I'm chilled out, I feel good. Now I'm and I'll listen to this later. But I feel like they've started to lean into this shoegaze side. Like I feel like you know when you remember when Kevin Shields put out the My Bloody Valentine follow up and it just kind of fell bland.
Nah, no one even remembers it.
If he put out this Beach House record, right. I think people would still be talking about it because there's stuff on that kind of reminds me of like Lost in Translation. Yeah. You know, it's there's feedback, there's dissonance, there's a haziness to it that kind of undercuts the there's like this perfect sheen on a lot of Beach House records that lends itself to a sameness. Mm-hmm. Though they write really nice songs, but everything's just at like a 5.
Right.
You know, everything's just like perfectly in the middle. The tempo's the same. Yeah. And then it's really pretty. Uh-huh. And you just kind of, at some point, prettiness kind of just fades into boredom. Mm-hmm. But there's enough feedback and enough introductions of new things that I feel like this Depression Cherry is like the way I've always wanted them to go.
Interesting.
So that's one to check out.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of really good rap records that came out, but I think my favorite. There's this dude named Vince Staples out of L.A. Mm-hmm. that I think has made the best L.A. record out of any of those guys. Summertime 06. This kid just spits fire. He just gets on the mic and spits fire. And a lot of what I don't like about modern rap music is that I think the beats are too sparse. Mm. And they have not they've tried to do like this they've all been listening to clips.
Right.
And they all trying to do this Pusha T thing. Uh-huh. And I just feel like if you're going to have sparse beats and you're going to try not to do hooks and you're going right. to not try to make hits.
Yeah.
Man, you got to be fire on the mic.
Yeah.
Because it's just you.
Yeah.
And most of them don't have it.
Right.
And there's also this movement toward these guys that all sound like Future that can't sing, but they really sing their hearts out. Right. You know, Fetty Wap and Young Thug and all these guys. Yeah. It's not my thing, but enjoy, kids. Yeah. It makes me feel really old.
Right.
Vince Staples is the kind of thing I like. Huh. And I think this kid, I mean, all the stuff that people used to say about Odd Future, I think he actually is. Mm. You know, all the stuff that, because he's really good on the mic, he's really compelling, he's really smart, and he's really young. And I feel like it's my favorite of these kind of rap records since Danny Brown's Old last year. And I think these kids are stars. Danny Brown and Vince Staples kind of stand out among a pack of kids that have just, they've grown up in an era when hip hop's the dominant cultural force.
Right.
They don't think it's weird when white kids listen to their music. Mm-hmm. They don't think it's weird when white kids are at their shows. And They just rap their brains out, you know. It's this compulsion with them, and I feel like they're in this spot where I feel like they can make records every 8 months because they just got a lot going on. They have that dangerous youthful energy, you know what I mean? So I would check out Summertime 06, and I would say that's my favorite rap release this year. Yep. And I think that's going to do it for us. we'll do another one of these music segments about Tucson Records.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to touch on any because I think they're kind of different topics.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of good stuff this year. We'll do one of those
We're in a stretch of them.
Yeah, exactly.
So to try to talk about it now without touching on like the new Catterwall record.
Right, exactly.
Or Matt's Butterscotch Cathedral record's officially coming out in a couple of weeks.
Exactly, yeah.
So once the heavy hitters have kind of made their presence as felt, we'll do a Tucson Records and we'll see how many people we can make mad by leaving them off. But what do you got to plug? You got anything going on?
Yeah, Karima Walker's coming on my show tomorrow night. I love Karima.
Oh, she's the best.
I always enjoy talking with her.
Great.
So she's going to be coming on. Not tomorrow night. I guess today's Saturday.
Is it?
She's coming on in a couple days. Whenever you're listening to this, she was probably on in the past. But we've got up on KXCI. This is a good thing to plug, I guess. Go to KXCI.org. For a while, obviously, we've had the podcasts up for the live performances that we do on Locals Only, but we now also have archive content for all of our shows.
Awesome.
So you can go on and listen to the full experience for whatever show you want to listen to, including Locals Only. So explore, check that out. A lot of good stuff happening on KXCI right now. Big news coming in the last week with the announcement
Huge.
Of the the RFP that we were able to be awarded along with Brink Media and Wave Lab for
that's a monster.
Yeah,
that's a big deal for a lot of people.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of good stuff going on right now, but what do you have going
Nothing.
On?
Nothing. Just
a baby.
Just a
dumb old baby that's just hanging out.
Yeah, he is very intense.
Yeah.
He requires a lot of energy and attention.
Yeah.
And speaking on your archives and podcasts, start with that Catterwall one. That thing was fire.
That was really good.
God, they're good.
Yeah, that was... they're just good. I'm not really going to say anything about it. They're just very good. And that album, it came out last night.
Did you go to the show?
I did.
How was it?
It was great. There were probably 250
nice.
There. I mean, it was a really crowded room. I saw New Doubt for the first time. I hadn't seen them play before. Pretty cool stuff. Very, like, not a genre that's well represented in Tucson, but it's straight up kind of post-punk that sounds like from that period between like 1983 and 1987, when people were trying to figure out like how far can you stretch something while still calling it punk music. So anyway,
cool
stuff. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah,
cool. All right. Well, you want to call it?
Yeah. I guess we'll do this again, right? I think
we'll figure out a time. It's gonna be intermittent. We'll have college football talk. We'll have some more UEFA. We'll have some more Premier League. We'll have some more. We'll bring your brother in.
Yeah, and we are actually so. I guess it's good to just address it before we wrap up the show. So we are going to be trying to figure out some ways to shake up the show a little bit. Rusty's decided to step back a little bit for the time being. We're still looking forward to being able to bring him around when he's got stuff to.
He's got a Tucson roller derby segment. He wants to chime in with
and a lot of other cool stuff, but
the third seat will be open.
It'll just be the two of us for a little while, but there's a lot of stuff that's after the summer lull where we slowed down. There's a lot of stuff that's happening now with not only the NFL, but we've got Wildcat football to touch on at some point once they start playing meaningful games.
Yes.
We are only 38 days away from the start of the NBA season.
Oh, my goodness.
Hard to believe.
Oh, I got the vapors just now.
I know. So, on that note.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here on Can't Wait. We're going to keep doing this until someone tells us not to.